Okay, let's go back as we begin chapter 41 of Genesis. Let's go back and read that last verse in chapter 40. And you remember the story. Joseph was in prison. The chief baker and the chief butler were thrown into prison with him. He was put in charge of them. They both had dreams. He interpreted their dreams. The baker was told that in 3 days he was going to die. The butler was told that in 3 days he was going to be restored to his old position. And so David interpreted those dreams. And as the butler leaves, he's thinking, well, he's going to go back and he's going to tell Pharaoh what a great guy I am. And he's going to tell him how I've been wrong being put into this prison. And he's going to get me out of here. Well, what did he do? Read the last verse 23 of chapter 40. It says, yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Now, how long did he forget him for? Look at the text in chapter 1 of verse 41. Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he stood by the river. Again, you got to put yourself in Joseph's shoes. I mean, he's all excited. He thinks maybe this is his way out. And now, you know, a few days go by, a few weeks go by, a few months go by, a few years go by, and he's still in jail and he feels forgotten. And I'll tell you this right now. If it had been up to the chief butler, how long would he have been forgotten? Forever. Because as far as the chief butler was concerned, he could care less about Joseph. I mean, he knew Joseph was in that prison. He hadn't forgotten him in a mental sense. He had forgotten him in an active sense, in that he wasn't going to do anything to help him. Now, I'll tell you this. There's a lesson there. People will forget you unless it serves their self-interest. I'm telling you, they'll do that. I mean, as Christians, hopefully we're above that. But I'll tell you, most people, they really only care about you as long as somehow that is self-serving. And I think we're all guilty of caring about others based upon our own self-interest. So I'm not just picking on non-saved people. I think we all sometimes are like that. But here's the lesson. God never forgets you. See, God hadn't forgotten Joseph. I mean, Joseph was in the exact place where God wanted him to be, and in the timing was exactly the way God wanted it to be. And when God was ready for him to get out, he was going to get out on that very moment. I don't know what you might be going through tonight or this week or the next year or the next several years, but wherever you're at, God knows where you're at. He knows the situation you're in, and you're going to get released from that situation whenever God chooses, and it's going to be the perfect time for you. And God knows what's best for you, and that's why we have to trust him in situations like this. So Pharaoh has a dream let's look at chapter 41, verse 1. Came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. And we talked a little bit about dreams last week. And this is not just any, you know, flippant dream. It's not it's not something caused by what he ate. This is a dream that comes from God. And usually if you get a dream from God, we talked about it, it's going to be vivid. The details are going to be there. And the next day when you wake up, you're going to remember those details. And sometimes those dreams are going to repeat themselves, just like they did for Pharaoh until you finally get the point. So Pharaoh doesn't just have any normal dream. He has this vivid, disturbing dream. And that dream, we know for sure, is given to him by God, because Joseph is given the interpretation. And let's look at the dream in verses 2 through 4. It says, suddenly there came up out of the river 7 cows, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. Now, right away, when I look at this dream, it's a lot different to me from the butler's dream and the baker's dream. This is one you almost think you can interpret without the help of God. I mean, yeah, you can look at this and study this for a while. I'm kind of surprised that the magicians and the wise man did interpret it when Pharaoh turns it over to him. But I believe God's blocking that interpretation. So that's why they don't interpret it. But as we look at the dream, I mean, you can almost figure this one out. I mean, here's these 7 cows, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. And then behold, 7 other cows came up after them out of the river, ugly and gaunt. In other words, they were just skin and bones. And they stood by the other cows on the bank of the river, and the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine-looking and fat cows. So Pharaoh awoke. All right, now, and then he has a second dream. And what you're going to see in the second dream, it's a different dream, but it has the same interpretation. It has the same meaning. Look at the dream in verses 5 through 7. He slept and he dreamed a second time, and suddenly seven heads of grain came up on one stalk, plump and good. Then behold, seven thin heads, blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the seven thin heads devoured the seven plump and full heads. So Pharaoh awoke, and indeed it was a dream. All right, now he's going to call all his magicians and wise men and satraps in. And in verse 8 it says, now it came to pass in the morning that in his spirit was troubled. When you have a vivid dream like that, a disturbing dream like that, one that you can remember every detail the next morning, it's going to trouble your soul till you get some kind of interpretation. And he sent and he called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men, and Pharaoh told him his dreams. Now that's different from the way Nebuchadnezzar did, man. He didn't give him that grace. He didn't tell him the dream. He said, man, not only are you going to have to interpret the dream, you're going to have to tell me what I dreamed. Nebuchadnezzar was a pretty sharp guy. He wasn't going to let him just give him any interpretation. But Pharaoh doesn't. He just tells him the dreams. But there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. So, again, I believe that was because God was preventing them from having an interpretation, and he wasn't going to let them have an interpretation. Now, the chief butler is hearing all of this. He understands that Pharaoh's had a dream, and now it's going to be convenient for him to remember Joseph. So read verses 9 through 13. It says, then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I remember my faults this day. What faults is he talking about right there? The fact I left Joseph rotten in prison, even though he did me that great favor. I remember my faults this day. But why is he remembering? Because it's convenient for him to remember it. He's going to get some brownie points by finding somebody that can interpret Pharaoh's dream. So it really is, it's not a great confession there. But anyway, in verse 10, it says, when Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in custody of the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, we each had a dream one night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Each interpretation was different. Now there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard, and he told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us, he's speaking of Joseph, to each man he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came to pass, just as he had interpreted for us, it so happened. So I was restored to my office, and the baker was hung. All right, now, verse 14. So Pharaoh immediately calls for Joseph. I mean, he listens to the butler and realizes that, you know, this guy Mike can do the interpretation for him, and he's disturbed by this dream. So he sends and he calls for Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon, and he was shaved and had a change of clothing and came to Pharaoh. Now, we know at this point that Joseph's been in jail at least 3 years, maybe more. I'm guessing maybe about 5 years at Potiphar's, you know, maybe about 8 years at Potiphar's house, about 5 years in prison. It's going to be 13 years have passed at this point. So somewhere in that range. I mean, we're not sure. We know at least 3 years, but you got to figure, you know, he's looking pretty ragged at this point, probably a little bit like John the Baptist. You know, I mean, he's probably got the hair, you know, hanging down below his waist. He's got a beard down to his belly. He probably looks like some kind of wild hermit or something. And his clothes are ragged and he stinks, and he's got sores and scars from the shackles that he's been wearing. And you know, he's just a big mess. And so before they bring him to Pharaoh, they want to clean him up. And so in verse 15 and 16, it says, and Pharaoh, once they got him cleaned up, he comes to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh says to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. But I have heard it said that of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it. So Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Now, what does he do right away? Same thing he did before with the butler and the baker. What does he do? He gives God all the glory. Before he even begins to interpret the dream, he says that this interpretation is not mine. This interpretation is coming from God. And God will give you an answer of peace. Now, what does he mean by an answer of peace? Well, it means that when you have an uninterpreted dream, then your soul's disturbed. So once you get the interpretation, then you're going to have an answer of peace. And I have no doubt that Joseph was confident. And you know, it's absolutely amazing to me, his confidence that he knows he's going to get this interpretation. Here's Joseph. I mean, if anybody could hate God at this point, it would be Joseph. I mean, he's been mistreated. He's been treated unfairly. He's gotten a shaft everywhere he's been. Now, he's also gotten God's favor. He's seen God's favor. But he's had a pretty rough time. And you got, he's in jail. Has he got a Bible? A New Testament? It wasn't even a New Testament then. It wasn't even Genesis back then. He is Genesis. So he doesn't have anything to read. They don't have a hymnal. There's nothing to sing. There's no Christian buddies to talk to. He is all alone in jail. No Christian bookstores in the jail and none of that stuff. And he's all alone in jail, and yet he's so close to God that when Pharaoh says, I think you can interpret my dream, Joseph says, I can give you an answer of peace. I mean, he's so confident in his relationship with God that he, by faith, states that I'm going to give you this interpretation. I mean, that should be a chastisement to all of us, you know, weak men and women of faith. I mean, I had to put myself in that category because I don't know, after 13 years of prison, I would come out just ready to give you an interpretation like that, or 13 years of being wrong like he was, 13 years of slavery, Potiphar's house, and prison together. But he does, and so he tells Pharaoh his dreams. I mean, Pharaoh tells him his dreams in 17 through 24. It says, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, and he gives the dreams again, behold, in my dream, I stood by the bank of the river. Suddenly, seven cows came up out of the river, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. Then, behold, seven other cows came up after them, poor and ugly and gaunt, such ugliness as I've never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the first seven, the fat cows. I remember one time going to Acapulco, New Mexico, back in my wilder days. And I remember, this is before I really cared about anybody other than myself, but I remember getting off the airplane and driving to the Princess Hotel in Acapulco and seeing cows along the road that fit this description, ugly and gaunt. I mean, I'm talking about cows that were feeding off of, you know, just sagebrush. And they were, you know, their bellies were sunken. I mean, their ribs were showing, and their bellies were all bloated out. And you could just tell they were the cows that the people were going to eat or get milk from or whatever were starving themselves. So you knew it was a really bad situation. So these cows are something like that. I mean, just ugly cows. And it says in verse 20, and the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the first seven, the fat cows. And when they had eaten them up, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were just as ugly as at the beginning. So I awoke. Also, I saw in my dream, and suddenly seven heads came up at one stalk, full and good. And then behold, seven heads withered, thin and blighted by the east wind sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the seven good heads. So I told this to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. All right. Now, in verse 25, without any hesitation, I mean, Joseph doesn't say, well, let me, you know, I've heard your interpretation. Let me go and pray about this for a couple of days, a couple of months, a couple of years, whatever. I mean, give me some time and I'll come back with an interpretation. No, without any hesitation, Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. In other words, the two dreams that you have one meaning. They both have the same meaning. And what God has done, he has spoken to you about what he's going to do in the future. Now, here's where I want to pause here for a minute. There are a few lessons about pagans and politicians that I think we can learn here too. We often too quickly put God in some kind of box. Some kind of box that he would only speak to Christian people and that he can only work through Christian people. God works through pagans just about as much as he does through Christians. I mean, there are vessels of wrath and there are vessels of honor, but they're both vessels. They're used to do what? They're used to fulfill God's purposes. So God can give dreams to pagans. I mean, this Pharaoh is no doubt a pagan. And I, you know, all of us were pagans at one time, weren't we? Or the other. So he can give dreams to pagans. So don't say he can't speak to pagans. And he's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, isn't he? And the other thing that I see in this is that one way or the other, he can insert or he can assert his influence over godly or ungodly man. But why? Because God is on his throne. God can get done anything he wants to do at any time he wants to get it done. That's the point. And the reason I say that is because I know we're all, well, I don't want to get political here, but there's a lot of people right now that are really, you know, almost ready to throw up their hands because of the political situation in the United States. See, I don't know that it's a situation. I mean, it's almost like, well, poor God can't handle the president we have now and the Congress we have now. Yes, he can. God is still in control, and God's will is still going to be done. And God still has influence over politicians. In fact, sometimes I think it's less dangerous to have a pagan politician, and I'm not naming any names, and I'm not calling Obama a pagan, but I think sometimes it's less dangerous to have that than a so-called Christian that's not really a Christian. That's really a dangerous thing. Okay, so let's don't give up on our country yet as Christians. And like I'm hearing a lot of people doing, a lot of Christian leaders doing, you know, like, man, this country's done for. No, we're not done for. God is still on his throne. All right, now, he says in, let's see, something else I wanted to say. What verse was I on here, 41? I can't lose my place here tonight because it's a bunch of... I think I left off with 25. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. No, you're right. And then he said, the seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. All right. And now, that's another thing, a lesson that we can get right there. God gave him the dream not just once. He gave him the dream twice. And that kind of goes along with the law that will come later on, that a matter is established by what? Two witnesses. So he actually gives them two witnesses to this truth. And so this is going to solidify this in Pharaoh's mind. But there's also a lesson there for us. Sometimes if you're trying to find the will of God, and maybe it comes through a dream, or maybe it comes through a word from a prophet, or maybe it comes through some other type of thing, if you get it once, you might not be sure. But if you get it twice, and you know it's coming from God, then you can be sure that's a word of God. But now here's where we got to be careful. If we've gotten a word from God twice, do we need a third word from God? See, sometimes we get a no from God, and we get it from him twice. But we don't, Balaam got that, didn't he? Remember? And what did Balaam, he kept pestering God. And eventually God gave him what he wanted, which was what eventually destroyed him. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that at some point when you've gotten a word from God and then God has solidified that word with a second witness, then you need to, at that point, take that as a word from God and by faith, you know, just draw a line in the sand that I believe God now and I don't have to test God on this anymore. I think sometimes we're guilty of showing a lack of faith and we're constantly testing God, and then sometimes we're just like Balaam, we end up getting things that we pester God for that God really doesn't want us to have that really do harm to us in the long run. So anyway, all right, verses 27 through 32 now, Joseph's interpretation, the rest of his interpretation. And the seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoke to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come through all the land of Egypt. But after the 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the thin cows will eat up the fat cows. The good crops will be eaten up by the bad crops. And so the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine, for it will be very severe. And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice because the thing is established by God. Exactly what I was talking about. In other words, it has a second witness. And God will shortly bring this thing to pass. All right, now, verses 33 through 36. Now, Pharaoh says, now therefore let Pharaoh, now what Joseph is going to do in 33 through 36, he's going to at this point give some wise advice to Pharaoh. He's going to tell him what he needs to do. And I believe he's doing all of this by what? Or by who? By the Spirit of God. I mean, Joseph, I have no doubt at this point senses that the Spirit of God is upon him. And that's why he's able to immediately interpret these dreams, that the Spirit of God is upon him, and he's able to not just give, you know, a 10 cents worth of advice, but to give godly advice, exactly what we were praying for earlier, that we would have the kind of Spirit upon us if we're wanting to speak to people, that we're to say the right things, and that comes by the Spirit of God. And so Joseph is about to give Pharaoh some godly advice, and I think Pharaoh recognizes it as godly advice. And you know, one of the ways you know if you're giving godly advice or not, people will recognize it as godly advice. When you speak by the Spirit, you go way past the mind and into the soul and into the heart, and you know it when you're doing it. You know when you're talking to somebody trying to impart wisdom to them, and you know that the wisdom is coming from God, that it's going deeper into their souls than just when you're giving them some friendly advice. I mean, as a pastor, I run into this not all the time, but most of the time when I'm giving advice, it's like, man, it's so dry and it's so dead, and it's like, you know, you might as well, you know, go get it from your next door neighbor, because I'm really not helping you. But there are times when I know the Spirit of God is actually speaking through me, and that advice is really sincere advice. And that's not just for pastors, that's for all of us. And so that's why we want to seek God before we do hand out any advice. And so anyway, Pharaoh senses this, there's no doubt. But anyway, listen to the advice. He says in 33, now therefore let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man. Aha. Now, if Joseph was like most of us, or like the normal human being, he would be doing this out of pride, wouldn't he? But this is God speaking again. And I think Pharaoh senses that. I mean, it'd be like, hey, man, I don't want to be in prison anymore. Select me. Here I am. But anyway, he says, select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this and let him appoint officers over the land to collect one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the seven plentiful years. Now, you can imagine you're sitting here, you're Pharaoh, and here's this guy just come out of jail. And he's imparting all of this wisdom. He's interpreted my dreams. Man, I got to believe, hey, something supernatural is going on here. And let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. Then the food shall be a reserve for the land for 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, and the land may not perish during the famine. You know, I believe this is a combination of two things, this wisdom that Joseph is imparting. It's a combination of God's Spirit upon him, but it's also a combination of that hard knock school of economics he had gone through in Potiphar's house and as keeper, head over the affairs of the jail. So he's learned a lot of stuff, and he's applying it here, and God's given him the wisdom, and he gives this advice, and Pharaoh receives it. In 37 and 38, it says, so the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a one as this? I mean, is there anybody any wiser than this? Because, see, Pharaoh sensed that this wasn't just any man, that he was speaking by the Spirit of God. He said, this man in whom is the Spirit of God. Now, did Pharaoh at this point understand Jehovah God? I mean, Yahweh God? Did he know anything about the theophanies or pre-incarnate Jesus Christ or any of those things? No, he didn't know any of that stuff. Pharaoh was a pagan worshiper. They had a plethora of gods in Egypt, thousands of gods. I mean, the frogs were gods. They worshiped almost like the Indians do now. They had just almost everything. They had a god for everything. And their greatest god was the sun god. And so all Pharaoh knows is that this god is able to do what none of the other gods could do. And he's kind of like you remember when Paul was on Mars Hill and they were all worshiping all of those gods, and Paul pointed them to the unknown god? So really this is kind of the unknown god that Joseph has pointed him to. And so Pharaoh says, how, we ain't going to find a better guy than this. He has the Spirit of God. Then 39 through 44, here's where, man, everything changes. Then Pharaoh says to Joseph, just put yourself in Joseph's shoes after all he's been through. Inasmuch as God has shown you all of this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. And can you just imagine what he's thinking? I guarantee you what he's thinking. He's thinking of those 12 stars, that dream he had, and the moon and the sun bowing down to him, this dream where he would have great power over his family. And now, hey, it wasn't just his family. He's going to be second in command over the greatest known empire in the world at that time. It pretty much ruled the civilized world of that day. And he's going to be second in command. He said, you shall be over my house and all of my people. You shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, bow the knee. So he set him over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh also said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Friends, you talk about out of the outhouse and into the penthouse, man. Joseph had, that's the day he was having. I mean, that's pretty amazing, isn't it? Only who could do that? Only God can do that. And a lot of people see Jesus Christ, I mean, see Joseph as a picture of Jesus Christ, as a foreshadowing of Jesus Christ, how he was sold by his brothers and put into a pit and left to die and left to rot, you know, as far as they were concerned. But what happened? I mean, God miraculously on the third day, he rose from the dead after dying on that cross. And so he is to some degree a type of Jesus Christ. And listen, he goes on, and the blessings keep coming now. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paaneah, which means revealer of secret things. And he gave him as a wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, the sun god. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Now, what's happening here? And this is kind of strange to me, because when Jacob was about to assimilate into the pagan culture with the Shechemites, God prevented that, didn't he? He stopped that. But here's Joseph, and he gets an Egyptian wife. And not only is she an Egyptian wife, he gets an Egyptian name, first of all. Then he gets an Egyptian wife, and not only is she an Egyptian wife, she's the daughter of the most pagan priest, the high priest of the sun god. And so, you know, man, what is God doing with Joseph? And how in the world could he trust him with a situation like that? You know, Joseph was a different man at this point than Jacob was when Jacob was given the same opportunity to be assimilated into a pagan culture, or the same circumstance to be assimilated in a pagan culture. And I believe that God knew that he could trust Jacob marrying the pagan woman. And Joseph marrying this pagan woman. And again, here's why I say you can't put God in a box. I mean, you would think maybe God would just stop this marriage and get Joseph on out of there, or separate him somehow. In fact, one of the questions that comes up in my mind right away, especially when these 7 years of plenty begin, why didn't Joseph go back home? Why does he make no attempt to go back home? I mean, there's all sorts of speculation on that. Some people believe he was mad at his father and hated his father because his father allowed his brothers to do to him what they did to him, and he hadn't raised them the way he should. I don't think so. I think he still loved his father. Some people say, you know, that he was just trusting God, that maybe God would work it all out where one day he would see his father and his brothers. I don't think he was doing that either. I really think that it was this rift between his brothers. And I really don't think he wanted any contact with his brothers. And if he was going to have contact with his father, then he was going to have contact with his brothers. And so So he goes all of these years without making any attempt to see his father, and it's really strange. And you could see how, you know, he could be totally assimilated into this Egyptian pagan culture. I mean, his wife, after all, is the daughter of the high priest of the sun god. But I believe Joseph was such a man of God that God could put him into a situation that he could put nobody else in. It might be true of you. I mean, you might be able to go into places that some other people can't go into. There's places that, you know, you might can send your kids to public school. And but there's others where they maybe don't need to be in public school. I mean, because of all the influences there. I mean, the public schools are about as pagan as you can get. Trust me, my kids went through public school. But if God tells you to put your kids, homeschool your kids, you homeschool them. If God tells you your kids need to be sent to a Christian school, you send them to a Christian school. But if he tells you to send them to a public school, then what do? You trust God that he's going to protect them through that experience. And that's not just for school, that's for jobs, for whatever you do. That's why it's so important, because some people have the fortitude or the spirit of God in them in such a way that they can handle a situation different from other people. Jacob was no better in God's eyes or no greater of a person in God's eyes than Joseph. But Jacob couldn't handle that. He would have assimilated right into that country and he would have been the most godless man on earth when it was all over with. But Jacob could handle it. I mean, Joseph could handle it. And so God, you know, allowed him to be in that situation. Again, don't put God in some kind of box. Don't do that. And what you do when you do that, you tend to point fingers at people that don't have the same God that you have. When God works in so many different ways through so many different people. All right. Or the same, when I say same God, we do have the same God, but the same God that you've made him to be, the box you put him in. All right. Now, verse 46. We're going to finish it up here. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. 30 years old. How old was he when he was taken into slavery? 17. So 13 years have passed. You know, that's really not that long. How long did Moses have to spend in the desert before he saw his deliverance or his rise to power? 40 years. Jacob, 20 years with Uncle Laban. So you know, really 13 years is short in God's eyes. I hate to tell you that if you're in a place where you may not like, it might be longer than 30 days. It might be longer than 6 months or a year. It might be longer than 10 years. It might be 13 years, and it might be 20, and it might be 40. It's up to God. All right. Now, verse 47. Now the 7 plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly. And so he gathered up all the food of the seven years which were of the land of Egypt, and laid the food up for the cities, and laid up every city the food of the fields which surrounded them. Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting, for it was immeasurable. And so Joseph, now watch this. This is really important. Verse 50. And to Joseph were born 2 sons before the year of the famine came, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Here's this pagan woman bearing him children. They're going to actually be part, these children are going to be part of the tribes. They're going to be the half-tribes of Israel. And so Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. And he called the name, he called it, which means made to forget. I mean, he had this son and he forgot about all the terrible things that had happened to him. Had he forgotten them in the sense that his memory, they weren't in his memory anymore? No, he understood then that they really weren't as bad as he thought they were. They actually was God working good through bad circumstances. I'm going to tell you something. God, if you stick with God until he gets you where he wants to get you, and you trust him and you patiently wait on him, when you finally arrive at the place he wants you to be, You're going to look back on whatever's transpired before that time, and it's going to be Manasseh to you. It's going to be something that's going to, because where God's gotten you, where He wants you, it's going to make you forget those difficult times you went through. You're going to see those difficult times as really good times. You're going to see those difficult times as God nurturing you and growing you and helping you and not harming you. And then he had another son. He says in verse 52, the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. In other words, in the land of my greatest difficulty, God was able to make me fruitful. Joseph hadn't gone back home at this point, has he? He's still in Egypt. What was the land of greatest difficulty? It was Egypt. But God had taken that land, and through that process and through that time and through all of the difficulties that he had gone through, and he had brought him to a place that he was married and he had sons and he was fruitful in that land. Fruitful in a lot more ways than just having Ephraim. Fruitful in character, fruitful in position, fruitful in ministry. He's going to do all sorts of great things for the nation of Israel. We're going to see that later on. All right, now, the plan, then we finish it up in 53 through 57. We can finish here. We made it through 57 verses. You can be proud of yourself. Then the 7 years of plenty which were in the land of Egypt ended, and the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said. The famine was in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Then Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph, whatever he says to do, do. The famine was all over the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians. And the famine became severe in the land of Egypt. So all countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine was severe in all lands. What a difference a chapter makes, right? I mean, just look at in chapter 40. Joseph is in prison. He's alone. He's forsaken. He's forgotten. We come to chapter 41, and he becomes the prime minister of Egypt. You know, God can do that for, I don't think any of us are going to be the prime minister of Egypt, and I'm not saying that. But life is kind of like this. Sometimes you're living a dream, and you end up in a pit. Does that ever happen to you? Things just going along and life seems like a dream, and then you're thrown into a pit. But just as quickly as you got into the pit, God can take you out and put you back where you seem like you're living a dream. I mean, He's sovereign over those things. And as your chapters of your life unfold and the chapters of my life unfold, there's going to be some pits, but we're going to come out of those pits, and we're going to be back living the dream that God has planned for us. But to God, I'm telling you this, the pits are just as important as dreamland, as the good times. They're just as important, maybe even more important in this life for us. See, man, here's Joseph. He's gone from the pit to the throne. And God's not even done with him yet. It's going to get even better for Joseph. Because probably what's the one thing missing in his life at this point is a relationship with his father. And maybe his brother Benjamin is all he cares about, but I think maybe he's even going to have a relationship with those other brothers before it's over with. See, God is sovereign. He's in control. He's in control of the pits, and He's in control of the dreams. You know, I don't know what's going to happen in this country we're in today, but it's pretty scary out there. I mean, we could have a famine just as severe as this right here. But I'll know no matter what happens that God still reigns and he's the same yesterday and today and tomorrow. And that no matter where I'm at, he sees me and he's going to use those circumstances to better me. And before long, whatever I'm going through, the dream that I have of walking with God will continue on. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Father, we just praise you and thank you for your word. We thank you for your goodness. Lord, we thank you that you're the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And Lord, the things that you did for Jacob and Isaac and Abraham and Joseph, Lord, you still do those same things today. Lord, you still watch over your children. Lord, you're there with us in the pits. You're there with us in the good times, Lord. And we just praise you and thank you for that. Father, I just ask for everyone to be encouraged by your word and Lord, by just who you are and a good and gracious and merciful God who is in control of every situation, Lord, no matter whether it's a pagan situation or a Christian situation. Lord, you're on your throne and you're in control. And nothing can come our way that isn't meant for our good because of who you are. And we praise you and thank you for that. We thank you in Jesus' name. It's in his precious name that I pray. Amen.